Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
And so Then I'm like, oh, we haven't spoken to an animal in a while. Let's see what that goat has to say. And the goat's like, I have been toiling in this mine my whole life. You know, my father's father toiled in this mine and I thought that I would be free and yet here I am, just another mining goat. Like, and you're just like, oh, man.
Hello and welcome to Pocket Buds, the back pocket podcast where I talk to my best buds about video games and stuff. This week, we're talking about Baldur's Gate 3. Let's take a trip back to 1998. James Cameron's Titanic was the biggest movie of the year. Viagra was approved by the FDA, Bill Clinton got impeached, and North Korea adopted a military dictatorship. Are any of those events related? Probably not. In that same year, a game was released. That game was Baldur's Gate, developed by a pre-EA BioWare. The game used a modified version of Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition and took place in the popular D&D campaign setting Forgotten Realms. The gameplay consisted of clicking where you wanted to go, dice rolling to make things happen, and talking your way into and out of things. So, you know, pretty much exactly how you'd expect a gamified version of Dungeons & Dragons to go. Despite D&D being arguably one of the most popular RPGs to exist, BioWare and publisher Interplay actually expected this game to flop. Fergus Urquhart predicted zero sales of the game in Britain. They really made this game and went, "Great job, folks, we will never financially recover from this." Of course, the game did amazing. The low, low expectations that BioWare and Interplay had for sales were exceeded immensely, and literally every single review for the game was a positive one. IGN in 1999 said that it set a standard for what role-playing games should be. In other words, it was an unequivocal and monumental slay. Fast forward 25 years. It's 2023, baby. The world is falling apart. Everything is going pretty stinkily. Not fun. However, a light shines at the end of a tunnel. If you walk towards this light, you do not die. Instead, walking towards this light presents you with a monitor, and on this monitor is Baldur's Gate 3. Baldur's Gate 3 was made by Larian Studios, with a license to make it given to them after the success of their previous RPG, Divinity Original Sin 2. The game was released in early access back in 2020 and spent 3 years there before getting a full release this year. The original team, according to BioWare co-founder Ray Muzyka, also used fan feedback during development, which I would argue is the late 90s version of Early Access. Of course, the first Early Access game wouldn't come out until 2009, a la Minecraft. So you could say that the Baldur's Gate series has always had the opinions of its players in mind. You could even say that Baldur's Gate 3 is an argument for why Early Access and looping fans into the development process is a very good thing. I said both of those things right now, so I would know. Much like its predecessors, Baldur's Gate 3 has been received very, very, very positively. Both critics and gamers are losing their minds over the turn-based role-playing game where you can make squishy with a bear and kick a vampire in the nuts. Once again, many believe that the latest Baldur's Gate game is setting a standard for role-playing games. So what's so good about it then? What sets it apart from the rest? Joining me today to explain it is my good friend, Steph Bendixson.
So how are you feeling?
Yeah, good, I think. I feel like I'm swinging wildly between states of being right now.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
That's all right.
I think when you're a creative person, you thrive off chaos.
Oh my God, absolutely.
So like steady state is hard to live with, but chaos is also exhausting.
Is there ever really a normal moment in your life when you are a content creator? I don't think so. I recorded the bonus episode of the Saddle Club episode the other day, and I was sitting there ranking horses on my own.
Important work.
That's I wouldn't call that a normal moment. And in my brain, I wasn't having a normal moment. I felt myself going insane in that moment. And I feel like that's such a perfect representation of being a content creator, because like you're sitting there ranking horses out of 10 and you go, okay, all right.
It's also an element of like, I'm sure a lot of people feel this way in creative spaces where you're having to come up with ideas, but like, is everything content?
Mm.
And I've had a few jobs that I've worked on where I've worked with other content creators, some of them not in the gaming space. And it's very interesting to kind of get a window into what their life is, because they're just trying to come up with funny ideas but also react to trends, and they don't even have the luxury of it being framed within this specific niche industry that we're in. It's kind of like open slather, and I feel like that must be a little bit maddening.
Baldur's Gate 3, you've been playing that.
Oh my gosh.
You've been freaking playing that.
Man, this is my most anticipated. If this doesn't get Game of the Year, like I understand everyone loves Zelda and stuff like that, and I love that there's a lot of good games and stuff like that, but like this is just, and I don't even know why I said that. I hate Game of the Year. It's an arbitrary dumb thing, but it's also just like, it's just one of the greatest games of all time already, and I've only scratched the surface of it, and I knew it would be this good because I know what Larian's capable of, and I love Divinity Original Sin, and they're all just such massive freaking nerds in that studio making a love letter to Dungeons and Dragons in the most kind of approachable, cool, fun, unexpected, loving way possible. And
do you think
it's
a good translation of Dungeons and Dragons?
I think it is, in the way that like, I think Dungeons and Dragons can be daunting to a lot of people who like, I don't play a lot of D&D because finding the time to regularly meet up with people, like a group of people for a campaign that takes typically hours at a time, I get so worried about letting the team down by not being able to make it, or you know, I end up being like, oh, I just can't commit.
Yeah.
And I feel like this makes it so much more approachable. I think also from just like an attention span perspective, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, obviously you don't have the visual aspect of it. You know, you're using your imagination. That's a wonderful thing.
Ooh,
but
yeah,
it's a lot easier for me to kind of like get sidetracked and distracted and lose attention and focus and, you know,
you're a visual learner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just harder to kind of stay immersed in it, I think, over long periods of time, at least for my brain. And having a video game kind of package all of that in an accessible, visual, interactive way, I think is a really great alternative for people who like that kind of experience. You know, role-playing, you sort of dice roll RPG, turn-based combat stuff, thinking outside of the box, puzzle solving of story situations. It kind of packages that for you in such a wonderful, complex, detailed way. It's actually incredible how they've achieved it.
Absolutely. How far in are you at the moment?
Like, not very.
Yeah.
Because I am playing with a four stack of friends. So like,
cool.
All members of our party are all players. We're not taking any NPCs with us. And I think I want to get through at least Act 1 and before I start a second playthrough with some NPCs, because some of the best story writing, I think, in the game are the NPC stories that you take with you in your party that I'm not currently experiencing. They're all hanging out back at the camp so that you can still further the story with them in some form, but you don't forge the same relationships and you don't progress their stories in the same way.
Funnily enough, it's actually a lot like the Fire Emblem series, like the more recent Fire Emblem games. And I say the more recent because I only started playing at the 3DS level of Fire Emblem games. And the way that you would kind of build relationships with your characters that would be part of your party is at the camp. Like when you're out battling, you're out battling.
Yeah.
There's nothing happening between you there. But if you want to get yourself a wife or a husband, you know, you got to do that back at camp.
Yeah.
No funny business.
And it's like they're all kind of getting the cliff notes of the decisions you've been making and and the stuff like that. So they're still kind of like, they don't just live in a liminal space where they are unaware of what's happening as you progress your adventure. But it's still just not the same detail of storytelling that you get because a lot of that storytelling happens when they're in your party and you're kind of adventuring together. I think also it's an interesting way to play the game because on one hand, with Dungeons and Dragons, you know, the traditional sort of tabletop game, you kind of have to live with every decision you make. You know, this is a game where you can reload saves over and over again and try things and experiment with stuff and then reload saves if you want to play that way. So that does change the dynamic of the game a little bit. But I think also for people who think that maybe being a video game, it doesn't have the same level of surprise and unexpectedness that you would think, definitely don't underestimate Larian because they have given you incredible tools to just try different things with and so many different details and character actions that can influence how a decision or an action will go. They've just hidden things within the environment that are just wonderful storytelling devices that most, like 99% of people won't never even find. But it's in there for the few people that do it, interact with that thing and investigate or go down that path. We found a chest the other day that was had magic wards on it, which is usually like, oh, okay, it's got something good in it.
Yeah.
So somebody needs to be able to dispel the sort of magic traps on it. And then you need someone who can lockpick. Mm. I'm playing a bard, so I have a lot of charisma and a lot of buffs. And for everyone who can contribute a buff, you can, as a party, add that bonus to someone's initiative roll or attack roll or whatever. Cool. So as a bard and with a pretty stacked party, anytime I go to lockpick anything, it's like my dice roll and then like a bunch of bonuses that will be added to it as well.
Advantages and stuff like that.
Yeah. So I do pretty well most of the time. We unlocked this chest and opened it and it just had like a bunch of cutlery in it. And I was like, okay.
Just in case.
Sometimes they do that. Sometimes they'll make you go through like, you know, a whole lava pit or whatever, and they'll put a chest on the other side. You're like, yeah, and it's like fucking empty or some bullshit. And you're like, okay, haha, so funny. So or it has a monster in it or something. Well, you know, just things like that where they'll just like, they'll troll you. So I was like, oh, okay, this is just one of those ridiculous things where they're like, oh, they've hidden a chest. They've magically watered it. We've gone to all this trouble, you know, to open this chest and it's just got a bunch of forks in it.
Well, can you sell the forks?
Well, here's the thing. So we held onto the chest for whatever reason. And as we were talking, my friend Shark was like, yeah, it's just forks. And as they took the fork out and put it on the ground, it was a helmet. And when they took the second fork out and they put it on the ground, it was a sword. And then the second one was a potion. And I was like, what? And so then we started experimenting, putting different stuff in the chest. And anything that you put in the chest looked like cutlery. And as soon as you took it out, it looked like the thing that it actually was.
Oh, that's so sick.
And I was like, oh my God, that's so sneaky but cool. Like, and what dev was like, how can I make this interesting?
How
like,
can I piss people off and then immediately give them satisfaction once they realize what's going on?
And so then our minds started racing. We were like, well, if we were in a situation where we stole something from like a village, could we put it in the chest and it would just be disguised as cutlery and then we wouldn't get caught like as thieves? Like, does it extend that far? Like, I wouldn't put it past them, you know? So yeah, there's just like funny little unexpected moments like that where I just think how many people have bypassed the forks and not realized that there was like a badass sword in here as well.
That would suck. And I have never played a Baldur's Gate game and I've never played a Divinity game. I've played some Dungeons and Dragons and I'm a big fan of role playing. I love being someone other than myself and ultimately always just putting in a lot of myself into the character anyway.
Sure.
I'm just about to start a campaign where I play a high elf magician or a high elf wizard. And my name is Larry Ginormous.
Yeah.
And I'm a real freak. So I'm very excited for that. I've never played any Larian Studios games. So I'd love if you'd be able to walk me through maybe a few of your favorite experiences that you've had in Baldur's Gate so far. Because you started with that. I'd love to hear more.
Yeah. For me, I love role-playing games because I love narrative storytelling and I love character relationships in video games. I love it when – I think just watching how that has developed in video games over the years has been the thing that I am most excited by.
Mm.
And good character storytelling and good character, you know, interactions.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, like, it's super fun having romantic relationships, trying to romance characters and understand, you know, what – they want to talk about and what they respond well to and stuff is really cool. But it's also just like getting to know the history and the backstory that somebody has written for this person and understanding how different decisions you make will affect how that character feels about you as a result and whether or not they're going to align with you on certain things. There was definitely when I was playing Divinity Original Sin 2, there was a sexy sorceress in a cave that we were trying to infiltrate at one point who was like, I like to talk my way out of things.
Yeah.
That's typically how I like to play games. Like, combat is fun, but to me, a real win is if you can win someone over with words, because I just find that a more interesting dance and it feels like a more fun game to me. If I've been listening to what they're saying and I've been picking up what they've been putting down and I can identify what I need to say to kind of talk my way out of it.
It is the most fun about being a charismatic character in a Dungeons and Dragons game.
Totally.
Is talking your way out of things.
Yeah.
So you're like, but consider this. You could attack us right now, but like, what if we just had a chat? Like, what about a trade? Or like, what do you do for fun?
And when you think about like Critical Role and like all the, like the most successful memeable moments from Critical Role have been people, you know, having us sort of talking their way out of a surprising, in a surprising way out of a fight with a funny suggestion or an idea or something like that. This particular sorceress that I was facing in Divinity Original Sin 2 in a cave, who was, you know, keen to kind of murder all of us, I tried to seduce her and she went for it, man. And she was into it. And I don't know if this was like just part of the way she seduces people or if it was like she was playing me the whole time.
Mm.
But she vomited a bunch of bees into my mouth.
Whoa.
And
whoa.
I heaps regretted making out with her.
Whoa.
And like players in my party were like, don't do it, Steph. And I was like, nah, man, she's into me. And this is like 100% going to get us out of this situation. Like, lucky you're with such a babe who, you know, is such a chick magnet because I've just saved us all.
You know what else you were? A bee magnet.
I sure was. Yeah, that was things went badly from there on in. And I think back on that moment. Now, anytime I have like a sort of a sexy encounter with someone, my friend's like, Steph, remember the bees? And I'm like, yeah.
But like,
the heart wants what the heart wants though, man.
And the thing is like, surely you can't get a mouthful of bees again. Like, you'd surely.
You'd think so. Right? You'd think so. But I'm sure, if not as a callback, Larian will find a way to at least reference the bees in some way or have a similar thing happen. I don't know. I wouldn't put it past them. But I can't not want to put myself out there or take the sexy path because this is probably like one of the horniest games I think I've played outside of like dating sims.
Yeah.
It's just like they so know their audience and it's hilarious how every exchange characters have can turn sexy so quickly. Like, it's sometimes it's dialogue trees. Sometimes it's just the actors' performances. I think they're all just like also massive nerds. But like, I was watching an interview with Neil Newbon, who plays Astarion. He's like my favorite character.
Mm.
He's a kind of very sassy, kind of British.
The Silver Fox.
Uppity. Yeah.
Yeah.
There we go. Yeah. Kind of character. And he was saying that it was one of the great joys of his life, not just to play a character from a game that is so beloved by its community and obviously seeing a lot of success and stuff, but he was like, I got to play out every iteration of this character's journey, like multi-universe journey, because you're recording so many different dialogue options. So like as an actor who becomes connected to a character through playing out their story, it was like I got to play out the version of him that goes down this path or makes this choice or has this reaction, you know, over and over and over again, just different iterations, different like emotional responses to things based on what the player wanted to choose. And he was like, it's a more powerful connection to any character I've ever had in my life because I got to go on so many different and varied journeys with them.
Yeah.
And I think that's such a cool thing to be able to experience.
That's got to be such a cool experience for an actor to be able to kind of take a character and, you know, characters mean a lot to you as an actor, and being able to take a character and go in every single direction that you can with it.
Yeah.
Like, it, surely it brings you even closer to that character than you would any other role, right?
Totally. And a big part of what gives this character so much personality is the personality that this actor has injected into them, and they have so many sassy one-liners and comebacks and put-downs. And, you know, I think it's just, they're all so well-written, but they've provided so much space for actors to just really play and experiment and make the characters their own. So they feel really human. Well, not human, but, you know, humanoid. And they've recorded all of their motion capture as well.
Yeah.
So even for an isometric RPG, that's super uncommon.
I saw that they motion captured almost 250 people to just get the unique body language of so many different people. That is totally incredibly cool.
And people picked up on it. You know, Shadowheart has this thing that she does with her head when she's talking that people were like, that's not something you've coded. Like, yeah, that's a human mannerism that she just does when she's talking, you know, particularly fervently about something. She kind of like tilts her head in a certain way and people were like, oh, that's distinctly her. Yeah. And you wouldn't program that necessarily, but they've captured all of that and it makes the performances feel particularly genuine.
Absolutely. And have you played previous Baldur's Gate titles? You mentioned that you've played Divinity, but...
No, I've played Divinity Original Sin and Divinity Original Sin 2. And so I knew that Baldur's Gate was going to be pretty similar.
Yeah. How do you think it compares?
I think it's the perfect kind of evolution of Divinity Original Sin, because Divinity Original Sin was a great story. It was a wonderful playground. You know, I would play through that game, but also just constantly be consuming content of how other people had interacted with it in more unique ways. Mm. You know, it takes a while, I think, to get yourself out of the video game headspace of like, oh, here are my options. It's like, actually, you have so many more options than that. Like, try combining things in your inventory and just throwing them at someone and seeing what happens. Or try thinking about what would happen if you snuck around behind the thing and explored through there, and maybe you find there's a small rat, and then if you use a spell that gives you the ability to talk to animals, and then you have a conversation with that rat, and the rat takes you, it turns out the rat is depressed, and if you ask the rat why it's depressed, then it'll tell you its whole life story and then take you on a journey down a tunnel that takes you to another place. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like so many things can happen if you just think, oh, like, what if this rat had something to say?
Mm.
And what if that was important? Like, the amount of...
What if I need to listen to this rat?
That what's amazing about the game is that, like, there are two... Well, there are so many different spells, but two significant spells that I think that are worth having in your party. Otherwise, you miss so much content in the game. Yeah. And one is being able to speak with animals.
Yeah.
And the other is being able to speak with the dead. Yeah. Because they have recorded entire conversations with animals and corpses that you would miss if you didn't have these. And they can give you extra information about things that are hidden, things that are related to the story, but you have to take the initiative to activate and use those spells in any given moment to get that. And you just, you're not guided in any way to do that. And so then I'm like, oh, we haven't spoken to an animal in a while. Let's see what that goat has to say. And the goat's like, I have been toiling in this mine my whole life. You know, my father's father toiled in this mine and I thought that I would be free, and yet here I am, just another mining goat. Like, and you're just like, oh man, like, somebody's written this, somebody has recorded this with the knowledge that most people would bypass the goat, but like, here I am having this, like, you know. And sometimes it's relevant, sometimes it isn't at all. Sometimes it's just a goat's life, a day in a goat's life, and they're just sharing, they're just venting.
At that point, you feel like you need to talk to every animal, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I would. Therein lies the trouble with this game, is that there is so much content that you live in constant fear of missing stuff.
Gosh.
And you have to accept that that's a part of it.
Wow.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Oh, that sounds huge. And, like, I really struggle with games that are big.
Yeah.
I never finished Elden Ring because it was too much.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it just sounds like there's so much in Baldur's Gate 3 that is so good that like, it seems like an unmissable experience. And that wouldn't be possible if not for how long it was in early access.
I think so too.
Did you play it in early access?
I did. I played up until the sort of end of the first early access area.
Yeah.
And then I didn't play it again after that because I didn't want to burn out on something that I knew I was already going to be replaying a number of times already. And the biggest takeaway from early access that I believe that they've balanced now is that, as someone who likes to talk my way out of things, we definitely got to a point in early access where we didn't have the sort of a attack power and ability to kind of progress and stay alive.
Yeah.
And the solution was to kind of go back to places we'd already been through and just kill a bunch of people.
Grind.
Which was like, I talked my way out of those fights so that we wouldn't have to do that. You know, whether or not it was like a moral choice is kind of beside the point. It's like, oh, I won that conversation so that we could avoid conflict. And that was a role-playing decision I made. And the game was kind of like forcing me to go back. And so that was a big, big piece of feedback from the very first early access. And it feels so much more balanced now. And I think part of that is also just having access to different classes and stat roles and things just being better balanced. But it definitely feels like now it is a more well-rounded game for role players who just want to be more passive.
Mm.
In saying that, it is so hard to play passively because people will arc up at the small things.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can trigger a fight in the most unexpected ways. Like,
how?
Sometimes you look at people wrong. Sometimes you, like, I don't know, you might say something that references a racial trait that they – you know, have sometimes, like, you know.
Oh, so you can accidentally be racist.
I don't think you can accidentally be racist, but like, I'm playing a drow and there are two, drows are like dark elves that live in the Underdark.
Yeah.
And there are two different sort of factions of drow. One, a kind of slave wielding faction that kind of work the mines and have, you know, people kind of just toiling for them. And they follow this goddess called Lolth. And then awesome. There's the Seldarine, which I'm playing, who are kind of like have broken away and are like, let's try and rally people to kind of fight these dudes who've just definitely become too, what do you call it? Zealotous.
Oh, they've overzealous is not the right. Is it?
Anyway, so I'm playing a Seldarine drow. But people see me and they're like, oh, drow. And so they're just like, oh, like. They'll make a comment about, or like I've encountered a few gnomes.
How are the mines?
Yeah, I've Yearn encountered a few gnomes who are like, please don't put me to work in the mines. And I'm like, oh, whoa, that's not me.
Sorry, no, I'm the other ones.
That's my cousins. But yeah, so sometimes people will just see, you know, react to your race. I read an interesting thread actually about racism in the game.
Yeah, I was about to say, that just sounds like video game racism.
Yeah, and it's, I didn't, of course, being a white person, didn't fully consider the ramifications of like racial interaction in a game like this, when I feel like racism is something that is not accepted, you know, in terms of like people enjoy it, but people understand that racism is a part of this fantasy world. And so sometimes people will play an elf that is racist towards dwarves or something, you know. In the world of Baldur's Gate, people have a lot of negative feelings toward tieflings because of their physical resemblance to demons.
Yeah.
And I read an interesting tweet from someone who was playing the game. They're a black person and was like, man, I go through life experiencing like pretty shitty microaggressions, you know, racial based interactions and stuff. And to come home and play a tiefling and have people make racist comments towards my character kind of sucks. And they were like, I love the game and I love everything about it. And I'm not saying that it's like racism shouldn't exist in this world. I believe it's part of, you know, storytelling, and it's something that doesn't have to be excluded from video games. But like, I tried to think about it. If like, imagine if one of the characters was just like super bigoted and you had a conversation with them, they were just like, wow, like you know, yeah, you dirty, like, woman loving. I feel like people would react differently towards that.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like people would have a strong reaction to that, whereas this is something they're kind of like, oh, I understand that this exists in this world, so, like,
yeah,
that makes sense.
And it's an interesting thing of, like, definitely, from what I've seen, like, it does seem more like fantasy microaggressions than anything.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, it's not justified, but instead it's like, oh, there's a historical reason why this race doesn't like this race. And it's still gross and it's still racism, but rather than it being like,
this feels like, oh, you've got horns? Okay, well then you look like one of those dudes and so you suck.
It's like we haven't made up a new slur for tieflings. It's just kind of like there's a historical distaste for them, which is interesting. But I also would argue that, and look, it might be due to fantasy writers being predominantly white.
Yeah.
But a lot of fantasy genres, which do include a lot of fantasy races, have kind of always had fantasy racism.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like people find it edgy to write.
Or it's just like an easy storytelling mechanic. Not easy, but like a storytelling mechanic.
They're trying to ground it in reality. And they're like, historically, this is a thing that has existed between different races, so I should probably put it in. I don't know. I think it's like, I think it's something that, like, because I saw a lot of people responding to this tweet being like, oh, just don't play a tiefling. It's like, oh, okay, so you're just like a person of color who doesn't want to experience this kind of negative reaction directed directly to their character.
Yeah.
Just can't play this race. Like, that seems a bit unfair. And so I was like, oh, I guess if racism was something that you wanted to include as a storytelling device, maybe you could include it with non-playable characters somehow. I don't know. It's a difficult thing to consider, but I feel like I get it. I get how that would be a really shitty thing to experience.
Also, people are allowed to just voice their feelings about a game.
And personal experiences.
Yeah, yeah, it's like totally. Such a weird thing of like, I think that's something I really hate about the internet, but especially Twitter, now X, is like you can post something and out of your control it can fall into a completely different side of the internet. But like you just say, voicing an annoyance.
Yeah.
And then people who you don't fucking know and didn't ask for the opinions of are coming in with advice that is just not wanted.
Totally. Like, and it was 100% one of those situations where they did not expect it to blow up the way they did and then were forced to defend their love for the game to people who were just like, why are you hating on the best game ever? They were like, no, I love the game. I was just like venting some frustration about some very like personal
feelings that I it's an expression of the human experience. Like it's not like it's got nothing to do with you, you know? It's so frustrating. Like it's very cool that the internet is able to connect so many people. And at the same time, I think it also sucks hard because sometimes this may be brash, but sometimes I think people are fucking stupid and they need to shut up.
Yeah, if man.
You see a tweet about somebody talking about how a game that they played featured racism and how they're kind of relating it to their own experience of racism and how that has kind of made them feel a bit strange. Why do you feel it necessary to jump in and be like, don't diss my favorite game? like it's got nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
It's so bizarre to me. But also like the internet's always going to be like that, you know? And in fact, it's just gotten worse.
It's also just like, but I feel like it's specifically bad in like the nerd and gaming community where I feel like we see both ends of the spectrum of people being so gloriously passionate about things that I feel like I don't see represented in other industries that maybe don't have as active an online community or maybe people who have existed less physically socially, you know, and prefer to express themselves online more. So we kind of end up with this real kind of crucible of thoughts and opinions and ideas and rabid passion for stuff.
Yeah.
But it's so hard to kind of walk both sides of that line and be like, I love this community, so passionate, and then just be like, shut the fuck up.
Like, straight up. Like and I love video games and I love gamers, man. Like I have been around gamers my whole life and it is so awesome to see people so passionate about such a cool industry. And at the same time, it's so frustrating to see people not get shit as simple as racism. And not to say racism is simple, but rather like it shouldn't be heated discussion that racism is bad. Like, it should just be like, yeah, racism is bad, for example, you know? And, like, it's definitely interesting is what I'll say.
Yeah. I think the other thing that's frustrating too is that it's like, I feel like there's the broader perception of video games and, like, gamers in general is, like, has been negative for a long time that, like, anything we can do to kind of better our position in the sort of in society's understanding of who we are and what we're about is going to be helpful for all of us.
Yeah.
And I just feel like there's just so much stuff that's just taken us like backwards so hard.
Absolutely. There's a lot of like the community shooting itself in the foot moments.
Yeah.
And as well, I don't know, I feel like the current state of the internet has kind of just made things five times worse. And like, I feel like I can say this as somebody who, one, is a gamer who was online, and two, at some point was a gaming journalist. There is a very hostile attitude towards gaming journalism at the moment. And it's,
yeah.
I feel like it's hostility that is being pointed in the wrong direction. Because I think people see, like, look, I'm going to say, people see Kotaku, for example, and they don't see it as a bunch of writers who all have different perspectives.
Totally.
They see Kotaku as this big, spooky, scary that is, you know, they're social justice warriors and they got shit takes and yada, 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 and not for the many different people that work there. And it's so frustrating because there has been a change in reporting in the gaming journalism world. Like, you can't deny it. There has been a change in reporting and a change in how things are written. And that's not the fault of the writers.
No.
From someone who has been in that industry, it is not the fault of the writers. It is the fault of the industry. Like, it is SEO. It is traffic margins. Like, it is it's just trending.
It's the way people respond now to I guess, just clickbait-based content. It can't really be denied or competed against. I feel like it's even just the same with developers. You know, like people, and fair enough, like I get it. There's like some massive mega developers and people will view like an Activision or an EA and be like, you know, I want to be able to hang shit on them for these like shitty practices around like the payment model and stuff like that. Mm. But like any small indie day of like game that comes out, people feel like they want to write a 10,000 word essay on why this game sucks and like downvote it on Steam. And I find it baffling that people think that people can divorce themselves from the idea of a bunch of people making a game like this. I struggle. I mean, I've never really particularly enjoyed giving any kind of score to video games. I won't say that I disliked reviewing games because I love talking about games. I love playing them and like sharing my experiences and my reactions to things. Love all of that. Yeah. Applying a number out of 10 or whatever to it sucks.
That was arguably one of the best parts about writing reviews for Kotaku. That being said, I didn't actually write that many because I barely had the time to write reviews because I had to write a lot more short form content to get as much content out as possible because that is the state of the industry now. Because people, as much as they say they enjoy reading long form content, it's not what's getting traffic. It is breaking news and short form news that is getting the traffic, but
and it's backlash or reactionary content or like
hot takes. That's what people are clicking on. And as much as you say that you like reading long form reviews or anything like that, it's not what's getting the traffic. So like, anyway, when it came to writing reviews for Kotaku, because they don't do scoring system, instead, you just write a review.
Yeah.
You just write how you feel about it.
Here was
that
my
game.
Experience with this game.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, you can align yourself with those feelings or not.
Yeah.
But there's no like arbitrary number that's ranking it against other games for you to go and like hang your like money against, you know, whether or not it's worthwhile. And I understand like people want to be able to like definitively understand whether something was good or bad, but like, video games are so freaking complex.
Yeah.
You know, even the most basic video games, they're so individual and, you know, people's reactions to them are so objective. It's really hard to just say, like, this game is a two because of these reasons when the next person might have a freaking ball with it. Yeah. So, yeah.
I feel like games are so personal, you know? Like, I've recommended so many games to friends and I've had them go like, this rocks, or it wasn't for me. And I never get hurt because I know that if I recommend a game to somebody and they didn't like it, it doesn't change how I felt about the game.
Yeah.
I still loved it, yeah. You know, because every game you play is such a personal experience. And I feel like if there was such a desire at one point for the quote unquote objective review of a game, and there is no such thing as an objective review of a game because everyone experiences games differently.
Totally. But then if you express a strong opinion in any direction,
yeah,
then you're inviting the wrath of everyone who feels so strongly in the other direction. Yes. And it's not worth it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not worth it.
It's just not worth it. Like, I find it so funny when people get so mad about reviews being passionate one way or another. Cause like, babes, just watch one episode of At the Movies with Margaret and David.
Mm.
One episode. Those two will never agree on a movie.
Yeah.
One of them hates it. One of them loves it.
You know what the difference was? They weren't online.
They weren't online.
So it didn't matter. They just lived in blissful ignorance of like people raging against their opinions. And I feel like that would have been a game changer for me. If I could just like have an opinion about something.
Oh, God.
And put it out there and then just like go on with my life.
Yeah.
Wow.
The only way I can get away with having an opinion, like a passionate opinion on a game one way or another, is making a joke out of it.
Yeah.
Like if I didn't like a game a lot, I have to make a joke. I have to be like, oh, this shit was doo-doo ass.
Yeah, okay.
I ate this up.
Oh, sure.
And
now
gave
that you said that,
IBS.
I feel like I've totally noticed that about you. I feel like, yeah, I've just done this really lame apologetic, like, oh, it wasn't really for me, but like you might like it. Or if you like this specific person who likes these things, it might be for you also. But like in my specific situation, I was like super like not specifically into it, but like there might be another universe where I could totally be into it. And it's, yeah, just like, shut up. Just like say.
So you don't like it.
Just say you don't like it. But yeah. Then it would also be representative of like, oh, women feel this way.
It sucks. It sucks to always bring it up. And I feel like people, you know, in the video game world will be like, oh, you know, you can't play the gender card this many times, but it's my favorite card, baby. It's always in my pocket and I live it every day. And the thing is like, realistically, as a woman in video games, you kind of have to tiptoe around the shit that you say to make sure people don't get mad at you.
Yeah.
You know? Because, yeah, if you've got an opinion on a game that is, you know, negative, and it's the exact same negative opinion of a game that a man has, chances are you're a lot more likely to be told that, oh, you don't know shit about it.
Yeah.
You don't know shit about that game.
Yeah. This bitch, what does she know? Yeah. I feel like also like, now at least, because there are at least a few more women around in the space doing stuff, yeah, I feel less like my opinions and actions are representative of the like female gaming community of Australia.
Mm.
And I can just point to other women. So like now, because I always felt like the need to clarify, listen, I am not amazing at Call of Duty. That doesn't mean women aren't amazing at Call of Duty. There are plenty of great women who are playing shooters, and now the space is becoming like slowly more approachable and less toxic, you know, that will just continue to increase. But I was afraid to put myself out there and to not be the best gun, coolest, skilledest, gamerest girl in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Because anything that I did was then suddenly like measured against the idea of what a female gamer is, because, yeah, it was such a rare thing and such like a novelty thing. And by the same token, I was afraid to express enthusiasm for anything super feminine. Like I was scared to say that I enjoyed a Sims game.
Sims
I was scared.
That sucks.
I was scared. And look, to be fair, the Sims wasn't super for me, but like I was constantly like afraid of how my choices would be measured against women as a whole. And I feel like now at least I can just point to other women and be like, yeah, but like her.
Yeah. Or absolutely. Like,
you know,
I grew up a tomboy. And I always had what some would consider quote unquote boyish interests, right?
Mm.
But like, you know, I always had a bit of a girly spin on it. And I feel like it's so funny because it's just like, you know, we gotta be twice as good for half the respect. And it's so bizarre. Like And once again, it comes back down to making jokes and being goofy. But, you know, I've taken absolute pride in being dog shit at most video games because it's funny to me. Like, if I'm not good at a game, like, who do I have to prove shit to?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. And I feel like the thing is, you broke a lot of walls down for girls in games as well. And it's awesome that you don't have to be the quote unquote voice for women in video games in Australia anymore, because that is such a heavy burden to bear. That is such a ridiculously heavy burden to bear, and it is not fair to put that on anybody.
Yeah. I think a big part of it also is I'm just older, and so like I care a bit less, which is pretty cool. You know.
Awesome.
You know, I give less fucks, as it were.
It rocks to give less of a shit about what people think.
Yeah. And I think also just like I'm more respectful of my own gaming enjoyment. Like,
true.
Like I just want to do like in video games what makes me happy, and that has been like super freeing. And so, and I think I immediately saw, even when I was a good game, I remember like the reviews where we just loved hard on something and it was just genuine like excitement and passion were the things that people always responded to the best.
Yeah.
And I think that is still true today, where it's just like, it doesn't matter how good you are at something. People want to see you enjoying it and having a good time. Yeah. And that's the energy that they want to be around. And while there's like a bunch of like clickbaity negative shit out there, like at the end of the day, that's like true north, you know, just like sharing the thing that you love and like loving hard on it.
And it's cool to love. It is cool to enjoy things.
It is genuinely super uncringe to love hard.
Oh, and what a way to end the episode.
That's the name of the podcast. I mean, this podcast episode.
It is not cringe to love hard.
Super not cringe to love hard.
I think that's a good way to end it as
well. I agree.
So I just want to say thank you again.
Anytime. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
I'll literally
anytime. I'll talk to you about life. I'll talk to you about Julia Stiles' great cinematic masterpiece, Save the Last Dance.
Yeah.
Whatever you want.
Thank you.
I'm here.
And a big thank you to you for listening. That's right. You. The girl reading this. Steph, where can we find you?
Hexsteph, pretty much everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I stream on Twitch a bit. I'm making stuff on social media, and I do a little bit of TV here and there. Pretty exciting.
Oh, yeah. Love that. Well, thank you for listening. If you're liking what you're hearing, why not give us a 5-star rating on whatever podcast platform you're using? Better yet, why not give us a nice little review? This review is from someone you may recognize.
Uh-oh.
This one comes from Goose Mangus. I wonder who that is.
That guy.
Yeah. Title for it is Ruby is a 5, in brackets 5, and then star podcaster. And he said, and I should know, I was on the first episode. And hey, if you really like what you're hearing and you'd like to hear more, consider supporting Backpocket over on Patreon, where you can get access to our lovely Discord full of all sorts of buds. And if you support us at a certain tier, you can get access to even more audio content just like this. You can also find us on Twitch, where we've got our main live show every Thursday from 7 p.m. AEST. And on TikTok, where we're constantly posting very good stuff for you to cast your big, beautiful eyes on.
Constantly.
And then there's the socials, a la X and Threads and Bebo and Vampire Freaks.
People love to throw it. Oh, Vampire Freaks!
Yeah, right?
I had a Vampire Freaks.
Oh, yeah.
When my hair was its biggest.
And you're also welcome to get around those socials as well. So once again, thank you so much for tuning in. And as a very sexual mind flayer would say, bye.
100% from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that?
Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.